racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour three. Going to talk to Rich Eng in a little bit and shortly. And Ed DeRose is going to join us, actually. We're going to do the break things up and do some Turfway with Ed. And we'll save the Gulfstream for tomorrow so we can get because there's just it's going to be tough. I mean, with these cards are just too stacked, and there's just too many stakes, essentially. So I wanted to get ahead of Dubai too, but everybody a variety of holdups, to be honest. Maybe Vance Hansen tomorrow. Kelly Riley, who normally does a DWC turn. She's just had surgery, and boy, it's been one after another. Kip with surgery, and there was somebody else too. Who did I try to reach that had something? I think Sal too. Sal Sinatra was under the knife, I think, as well. Everybody getting repaired and fixed up. You know, one thing that occurred as I went to go talk to Kip just now, I realized I went to my catalogs. It's another thing that Tina wants me to get rid of. And really, she's probably not wrong. There's really no reason for me to be keeping all these sales catalogs, to be honest. Right? I mean, that is absolutely easily online. But I realized I did not get the Gulfstream sale catalog. I went looking, and they send you the little postcard, and then you got to send it back. And I must have either not sent it back or whatever. But I realized that I didn't have the book itself, so I just went and printed out his consignment off of right off of the website. But I like the book. You sit there at night, Tina, watching a movie or something, and you go through the catalog, and a couple of notes from that catalog. It's a boutique, it's a boutique sale, and you've got American Pharaohs, and you got a bunch of Arrogates. Is going to be a big a big opportunity on that front, certainly. Candy Rides and Curlins, and this is a fancy, always a fancy set of horses, and some big, you're going to dissipate some big numbers, going through this. Who else? Ghost Sap. There's like five Ghost Sappers. Gunrunner among the first crops, including the one that that Kip has got. Into Mischiefs. Looks like two, four, six. Six Into Mischiefs. That they're going to get plenty of attention. Malibu Moon. Medaglia d'Oro. It's a highbrow set of horses, no doubt about it. Rich Eng standing by, and Thursday gonna get Rich in without Steve Haskin. Rich, I forever, typically Rich would be 11 third hour, whether it was afternoons or after we made the move to the mornings, but no Steve Haskin, which is too bad. And Steve, another that is not feeling well. And I felt terrible because this was a big, this is a big weekend. So we get Rich in on time. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. And no, I have not had surgery of any kind, but I can happily say that on Monday afternoon, I got my second Moderna vaccination shot. So I'm fully vaccinated, and I join other Americans to get their coronavirus shots.
Well, and as you mentioned last week, we talked a little Vegas. I mean, it it just, you know, the nice steady progress here. And, you know, various states, you know, here in New York, we seem kind of ahead of the, a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of availabilities. I know it's not that way for everybody, but it does feel that, you know, as quickly as possible, you know, to get as many people done as they can, that'll make it so much easier, particularly for Vegas, Rich. I, when it comes to conventions and you know, the real economic drivers that everybody counts on there.
Yeah, about a week or so ago, Governor Sisolak increased the minimum or maximum capacity from 25% to 50%, and that was just in time for the March Madness games of the past weekend. And I can happily report that the race and sports books were packed in town from the locals' places to the strip hotels, and it was really great to have people coming back into town. And you know, they bet a lot of money on the basketball games. There are still people, Steve, this amazes me, they try to bet every single one of the games. God bless them. But it was great to have the activity. And with the capacity at 50% now, and the relaxation of some of the stringency of some of the rules, you know, restaurants are starting to reopen and have more capacity. And I think we're starting to get more, I won't say more flights, but more people on the flights coming into McCarran Airport. So, you know, things are improving, and it's about time. It's been a tough year, but things are improving here in Vegas.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the tournament yesterday. Seth Merrow with us and Syracuse, and I told him, you know, you're facing off against SU with your Houston bet, and I told Seth, I said, Rich may be on, you know, one of the really savvy selections when it came to this tournament. You made a big case for Houston at least making the Final Four, and what was the parameters of your action with them?
Well, you know, when I was shopping for prices, you know, obviously I was not going to buy futures on Gonzaga and Baylor. At the time, I think Gonzaga was like 8-5 and Baylor was like 3-1 in the futures. And, you know, it, just like in the Kentucky Derby futures, you don't really accept prices like that. You try to find someone else with a little more value, a little more meat on the bone, so to speak. So the two teams that I invested in, this is about easily 30 days ago, Steve, was I bet Michigan at 8-1, and I bet Houston at 25-1 in the futures. And this is obviously before the brackets were set up, so I was praying that they were going to be on opposite sides of the bracket so they don't have to play each other. And knock on wood, they're two of the 16 teams that are left. But in all honesty, I won't say I'm a great handicapper on my own, but I listened to a station called VSiN, which is coming out of Vegas. That was created by Brent Musburger and his nephew. And it started in 2017, but it's a station that focuses on sports gambling. And so, you know, while I was listening to some of the activity from the handicappers, Houston kept coming up as very high in the analytics as far as their defense, as far as their efficiency on offense. They talked about their athleticism. Kelvin Sampson, even though he's had a couple of stubs of his toe as far as the brushes with the NCAA, is an outstanding basketball coach. You can't take that away from Kelvin Sampson. He's an outstanding coach. He was at Oklahoma for many years. And he was at Indiana doing a good job, and then he had a recruiting violation. But he's an outstanding coach, defense first. And so I landed on Houston as a team that I thought had a great prospect. And the game against Rutgers, for folks who watched that game, I was very lucky, and so was Houston, to get out of that game. Rutgers dominated the game for easily 35, 36, 37 minutes. And they kind of blew the last part of the game. The coach for Rutgers, a very good coach, but he got very conservative in the last few minutes. And they ended up with very poor shot selections because they would try to milk the 30-second clock down to about 25. Then they ended up throwing up just, you know, oddball shots, and it gave Houston a chance to knock a 9-point lead down to zero and eventually gain the lead in the last few seconds. But sometimes in the NCAA tournament, if you take a look at the champions, Steve, most of them have had a game or even two where they should have been eliminated, and for whatever reasons they were able to regroup and win the game. Hopefully that's Houston's game, because that's a game they probably shouldn't have won, and now they face a very difficult Syracuse team. That zone defense is unbelievable for Bayheim.
It's still you really latched on to something clever here. I mean, that just feels like, you know, given the way this thing has gone so far, that's a very live ticket, 25-1.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the way the seeds fell, you know, you've got an 8 seed in Loyola, you got the 11 seed in Syracuse, you got the 12 seed in Oregon State. And so, you know, the way the committee laid out the brackets and the seedings, Houston should get through that region. But as we know, you know, sports is not black and white. And games are not played on paper. They're played on the court. The Loyola team in particular, people are saying were underseeded, that they should have not been an 8. They should have been either a 6 or a 5 or a 4. I mean, you get different observations, but most people feel they were not an 8, and they kind of got disrespected. But, you know, I've got an angle. If Houston's able to get past Syracuse, which is going to be a tough test, and say they do play Loyola, who I think is going to, in my mind, is probably going to beat Oregon State. Loyola played literally a perfect game against Illinois. And in sports, on any level, it's almost impossible to play back-to-back perfect games. So, you know, so I'm kind of hoping that if they do meet, that if Loyola shows up with a B-plus game or a B game, that that might be enough chink in their armor to allow Houston to get past them to the Final Four. So we'll see. At least I'm live. I'm very live going into this weekend.
Well, and, you know, I'm just looking at it on paper, and it is pretty crazy that they end up, you know, there are two. Syracuse was an 11, Oregon State a 12, and Loyola an 8. So they, you know, on paper, there's no easy paths, obviously, in this thing. You're in nice shape there, and Michigan has got Florida State, and then if they get by there, they've got the winner of the Alabama UCLA. You know, I said on Tuesday, after, you know, the first two rounds were done, for all of the, you know, wacky upsets, it you could very easily end up with either Baylor or Arkansas out of the South, Houston, let's say, out of the Midwest. Alabama or Michigan, the one or two seeds in the East, and, you know, Gonzaga and, you know, I don't know, USC or Oregon, I would think Gonzaga. I mean, you could end up here with three number one seeds and a two, despite this thing having felt so, you know, chaotic early.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, a lot of people, when they analyze the tournament, the upsets occur mostly on the first weekend. When they get to the Sweet 16, usually the favorites run the Hoyle. But a game that I'm really interested in to watch is the game between the number one seed Baylor and Villanova, who I believe is the number five seed. But the thing with Villanova was a lot of people had them eliminated either in the first or the second round of the first weekend, because they lost their best player, the point guard, Connor Gillespie, tore his ACL. And then they got knocked out of the Big East tournament very early. I mean, they just didn't look like they were moving in the right direction coming into the tournament. And Jay Wright's just an unbelievable coach. I mean, he's got two championship rings, and you don't luck out to win two national championships. So he was able to regroup and get this team to play Villanova basketball, and they won both of the games over the weekend. And you can and the way they play, them and Loyola, they're just beautiful teams to watch because of their what I call high basketball IQ, the way they play unselfishly, all five players. Nobody is worried about getting their shot. They get the ball to the open man who takes the shot. And Villanova, played outstanding basketball the first weekend. So if they can continue that, the line that opened up between Baylor and Villanova I thought was pretty revealing. The way people were talking about Villanova, you would have thought that Baylor would be favored by double digits. But they opened up the line at six, which is not bad, you know, as far as that goes. But I think Villanova has a puncher's chance to upset a one seed. So I'll be very interested to watch that game.
And anything else that you like heading toward Friday?
Well, I think a game that
Saturday.
Another game I'm going to be interested in is UCLA. I believe plays Alabama, and UCLA's the 11th seed. And if you remember, they had to play the play-in game against Michigan State, and most people had, I believe it was something like on the ticket count, it was like 80% of the tickets. The money were on Michigan State, and UCLA just beat them, and they were the better team on the court. And then UCLA, you know, as a dog, won the next two games, so they've won three games in a row already in the tournament, and they're a big underdog against Alabama. Alabama's probably more athletic, but Mick Cronin, if for people who are in that Cincinnati area,
sure,
and know that Midwest basketball, he's a heck of a coach. He did a great job at Cincinnati. He probably wasn't looking to leave, but UCLA was looking for someone to stabilize the program, and they made a big run at him. And sometimes you just can't say no. And he's been at UCLA for 2 years, and you can see the team is starting to play to his personality, which is gritty defense and also unselfish offense. So I think UCLA is a very interesting underdog, especially getting a ton of points against Alabama. That Mick Cronin, he's going to have a game plan at least to keep his team in the game. And, you know, when you have a big underdog, let's say a double-digit underdog, you just want to be close with about 5 minutes to go and then try to figure something out to be able to try to maybe pull off a major upset. But the first 35 minutes, you just want to stay close. That's your goal as far as your game plan going in.
I'm just looking at the lines, and it's about 10, UCLA, Alabama. You playing any over-unders?
I don't. I'm kind of a bad over-under player. I'll admit that, because invariably when I see totals are usually made by styles. It's almost like a boxing match. A good boxing match is depends on the styles of the boxers. And the thing with basketball, you know, totals also are determined by the styles of the teams. I don't know why, Steve, but I'm just either unlucky or stupid. when I see two offensive teams, that should be, you know, like, you know, the game should be like 85-84. You know, I'll bet the over, and suddenly again it'll come in 69-68. It's like, you know, it's like maybe if I come on your show and tell your listeners, well, I'm betting this game over, I'd be doing everybody a service, because then they could just bet the under.
It's funny. There's some people that just that have a real. I'm just watching players' response using Twitter feed as a gauge, and it does seem like the opportunities beyond the. The win loss. I see a lot of people utilizing the halftime lines. Taking teams at mm-hmm. Through the half and the over under at the half. I mean, there's so many ways. There's so many options. And frankly, this is one of the challenges that we face. I mean, we can meld this into some horse conversation, Rich, as well. And whether it's you can give us a feel for what you thought of this past weekend and New Orleans and Fairgrounds action, Louisiana Derby, and so forth. But it's tough not to get kind of lured and interested in these opportunities, especially when there's such a great atmosphere, during these 3 weeks. I mean, this thing, you know, as you said, you know, being in Vegas for particularly the first weekend of the tourney, it's just irresistible. And, you know, as the sports betting proliferates, it's going to be hard to resist.
Yeah. If I could lend some advice, as far as tactics, as far as your listeners,
sure.
if they're in a state which has legal sports betting, and they offer what I call live in-game wagering, that has become extremely popular out here. And for folks not familiar with in-game wagering, you know, when you bet a point spread before the ball gets tipped off, you know, you've got that point spread, you know, whatever it is, a favorite or underdog. But in in-game wagering, once the game starts, what happens is during commercial breaks, a lot of these betting sites offer a revised line as the game progresses. And usually during a commercial break, which lasts two and a half, 3 minutes long, you will have a short period of time to actually get on, say, on your phone app and actually bet one side or another with an adjusted line. And a strategy that I like to use, Steve, is say I like the favorite. Let's go to the Houston game against I forget. They're not playing Rutgers. They're playing. I'm trying to remember the team they're playing. Syracuse. I'm sorry. I believe they're something like a six and a half, 7 point favorite. But say if Syracuse gets off to a good start, and at the first commercial break, the score is Syracuse 10 and Houston 7. Well, all of a sudden, the adjusted line might have Houston pick. It might have Houston, you know, at minus two, you know what I'm saying? It'll be an adjusted line, but all of a sudden you have an opportunity to bet Houston, who started the game at, say, minus seven. All of a sudden you might be getting minus two or, you know, or a pick because they're behind. So it's a strategy that's very, very popular with bettors. You got to be pretty savvy. You got to be pretty quick on the draw, but usually they update those lines and make them available during the commercial breaks of the broadcast.
And again, to tie it to, you know, to racing, and frankly, to a missed opportunity, you know, that portion, you know, the original Betfair concept, you know, the in-race wagering, you know, I remember when that, you know, before got regulated, right? I mean, that was the exchange wagering concept that, you know, seemed just tailor-made. I mean, it's already a whole generation, frankly, has probably, you know, what do they use as the, is it 15 years, whatever the generational demarcation is, has probably passed. I mean, from the time, you know, the internet infancy and before, you know, before we got in North America got shut out of being able to play on the exchange wagering market. But this was an area that, you know, that the sport had an opportunity if they could have figured out, you know, how to make it work, and they didn't. And as a result, you know, now we're hoping that, you know, there's a possibility of fixed odds wagering as an alternate, and there's, you know, there's a lot of potential benefit to the game in terms of teaching it to new players, to neophytes. But you know, you talk about in game, and the first thing I think of is the missed opportunity that we had with exchange wagering when it was first getting bandied about.
You know, that's a really astute observation, Steve, because I remember spending a lot of time studying Betfair and studying that when I was, you know, writing columns for the horse racing columns for the Las Vegas Review Journal. So I really spent a lot of time also, you know, studying on Betfair. And I remember one of the things that people were saying was a negative about Betfair is, well, you set up a potential for chicanery where, you know, you can bet horses basically to lose as long as somebody on the other side is willing to book your action and think the horse is going to win, and, you know, that kind of thing. But I remember reading comments from the Betfair operators, and the fact that, you know, they have analytics written in, they have these programs written in, and when they see a trend, when they see a type of wagering that was what they call suspicious, they would immediately alert the racing authorities in England, and in many cases suspend wagering if they think there's something, you know, just a little suspicious, a little fishy. But they can tell, you know, through the wagering. And that's no different than what happens here in Vegas. If, you know, people who don't understand how the sports gambling works, they think, well, people, the players are fixing games left and right. Well, that's not the case. And the Vegas, the bookmakers were actually kind of like the parrots in the coal mine, you know, where you can smell something suspicious, because the way the betting trends, you can tell when there's something funny going on. And for example, like the Arizona State point shaving that occurred back in the 80s, well, it was Las Vegas that saw it coming, because they could tell the way the money was coming in on these Arizona sure. State games, and they alerted the NCAA. It wasn't the other way around. So a lot of times the betting operator is actually your best protection against any sort of fixing.
No, and no doubt. And that, you know, that is also true when it comes to identifying patterns, or, you know, if there's something, you know, on our side of the fence that you know, is pretty readily identifiable, wagering pattern, or, you know, when there's these cancellations, the attempts to manipulate the pools. Mm-hmm. You know, one, it's funny, as you were talking, it also made me think of a story I read, and the details of something I read on the sports gambling front. It's kind of funny, Rich, that we've had a real sports gambling conversation, which is fine. I'm happy to have it. And people, you know, people are interested, and obviously it's related to, you know, it's related to horse racing. You know, an aside through the tangential side of things, but I did see something that Captain Jack Andrews wrote about. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, that he had been contacted about somebody that had taken advantage of an offer from, you know, one of the wagering companies, one of the sports betting companies, you know, like a $500, you know, free bet, which he promptly took advantage of and hit. And then when he went to withdraw, he couldn't get the money out. And in the fine print of the, you know, of the terms and conditions, there were some details that gave, you know, the company in question was William Hill, and it absolutely gave them an avenue to refuse, you know, to basically take back the money other than the, you know, the original offer, the original 500 that had to be bet. I mean, it's a very involved and detailed topic, but it made me immediately think that this was one of those topics where people, you know, people say when there's a controversy around racing and around maybe a wagering gaffe, or, you know, something that one of the tracks or one of the ADW companies, and there's something controversial, and everybody says only in racing would this happen. Well, no, not only in racing. It happens across virtually any, you know, any walk of not just gambling life, but, you know, it's also true. I mean, you can probably tie it to the financial markets as well, and so forth. And, you know, working with, you saw what happened over the GameStop thing right? I mean, there's mm-hmm. a perfect example. So, yep. But one of the things that has happened here that has become really evident is that the sports wagering companies don't want anybody sharp. They only want squares to come in and be basically raped. That anybody that they identify as somebody that, you know, is sharp and is going to win, they limit their action. And this is, you know, if you're following, you know, like I referenced earlier about, you know, seeing the kind of plays that sports bettors, that sophisticated sports bettors are making, this is also a case where the same sophisticated players are being just, you know, totally rebuffed because the books are limiting their action. So there's a lot of moving parts to what's going on here, and if they think that they're just gonna, I guess they can make a living just off of people that are gonna lose. Is that their marketing concept?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting topic that you bring up because it does get discussed and it is a real thing in the sports betting world in here in Nevada. There are some operators that are known that they will not take large bets. They basically want action from squares. And for people who are not familiar what the term squares is, basically squares are like recreational players, not professionals who bet large amounts of money. But the squares are kind of like, you know, someone who just, you know, bets the 4 football games at $55 each, you know, on the Sunday. And, you know, it doesn't really put in the work, and, you know, it's just more recreational or fun activity. But you know, sometimes squares can win. There's no question about that. But the sharps, the pros, are the people that the gambling outfits are afraid of, because basically the thing about booking action, it's not pari-mutuel like in horse racing. In booking sports bets, you can lose money, you know, on a game if all the money's overloaded on one side and the sharps smell a bad line and, you know, jump all over you. So you got to be very sharp and know what you're doing. And, you know, it's kind of unfair to think that you can turn all this business down, but I guess they do have a right to accept any wagers from any customers that they want. So, you know, in the example that you gave, I hadn't heard that, but that's unfortunate that they got that fine print, actually, maybe possibly cheated that person out of winnings when that happens. But, you know, just to, as a word to the wise, you know, when you're setting up a sports betting account, you literally have to pay attention to who the company that you're doing it with, too. And that's why a lot of people, even though the offshore business has been around forever, a lot of people still didn't want to go there because, if they won money, they wanted to guarantee that they actually got paid. And because there have been stories where companies outside the United States actually didn't pay American citizens. That's obviously bad pool. But another angle, too, that comes into play, Steve, too, with these sports betting operations, and this is the legal ones here in the U.S., you've got to be very careful about not just only the point spreads, but also the takeout, what they offer. For example, if you're betting a typical Sunday afternoon NFL game, regardless if you're betting the favorite or the underdog, you're betting $11 to win 10. They call it -110, and so that's a normal take here on the sports betting. But I've been reading on Twitter that some of these states, for example, would make it $1.20 on each side or $1.25 on each side. That would be the same as in horse betting. Say if you're making a win bet, if the takeout was 25%. I mean, that's basically the same thing happening. And basically, as a bettor, you're getting ripped off. So you got to be careful what you're doing and not just bet blindly just because the opportunity's there.
I'm tweeting the link to the piece, Rich, and I've got your name in it, too. I said, here's the Not Just Racing incident that I brought up with Rich Yang. So you can read that when you get a chance, and you'll appreciate it. Rich, going to get Ed in here to talk some Turfway, but got anything, got a play for today, or any thought about what we saw from Hot Rod Charlie Saturday?
Well, I did have Hot Rod Charlie on my product sheet that I had. I really liked him. you know, at this time of year, you always want to see where the strength is. And usually the strength comes from Bob Baffert. So that's always a good starting point. But, you know, I thought that race in the, I believe it was the Sham or was it the San Felipe, where there was a blanket finish with Medina Star and Roman Centurion and Hot Rod Charlie. Some people said that, well, that when horses finish like that together, inches apart, that it's a bad race. I took the opposite tack, that it was a good race. And so when Hot Rod Charlie shipped out of town, I said, this is a very live animal to me. So I did like Hot Rod Charlie, and I do like the Southern California horses coming into the stretch run of the Kentucky Derby, the road to the Kentucky Derby. I do like the Southern California horses still. But if I could give a horse out in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, a horse that I'm very interested in is one of the favorites, so it's no secret, but it's Gretzky the Great. Mm-hmm. When he ran in the Battaglia, if people call up the replay, this horse I thought was ridden 100% wrong. He was put on the lead, and it wasn't an easy lead either. And he was down on the rail, and when he got challenged in the deep stretch, this horse fought and fought and fought, and eventually gave up. Not gave up, but he tired, like in the last 50 to 100 yards in the race to finish third. But I thought that it was not a negative race in my mind. I thought it was a positive race because he tried so hard, ran well, but it was the wrong, it was just the wrong way to ride this horse. And when I saw that Mark Cassie hired Chris Landeros, I was thrilled because I really thought that he needed a different pilot to ride the horse differently. So I like Gretzky the Great to come right back and win in the Jeff Ruby. So I don't even know what the morning line is, but he's probably one of the favorites regardless. But I think he's the horse to beat in the Jeff Ruby Stakes coming up. So I'll offer that as an opinion. If you'd like, I can give out a couple of horses today for folks to. We'll take both horses. We'll be at Aqueduct in the late daily double, races 7 and 8 at Aqueduct today. In the seventh race, 6 furlongs, first level allowance, $82,000 purse. I like seeing that. But the horse that I'm going to come up with, the first horse is the number 8. She's a black belt. This horse is 6-1. The morning line, Trevor McCarthy has the ride. This horse didn't get a real clean trip last time. If you read the racing form comments, it's pocketed, assed into lane. But I think this horse only ran a neck behind the 6 risk model, who was 7-2 in the morning line, and they'll all be chasing the number 2 horse, Glass Ceiling, who's the heavy favorite. But I like the 8. She's a black belt. Also, she's I noticed she's part of an uncoupled entry with maybe you can pronounce the trainer's name. If you can help me on the pronunciation.
Cantamapsi.
Thank you. I don't follow New York as closely as I do Southern California. I've seen his name before, but I know I couldn't pronounce it.
He wins. So, he wins. Yeah, he wins, Cantamapsi.
Yeah, so it's an uncoupled entry. That's an angle I know some handicappers like when you have a trainer has two horses, one of them is a favorite and the other one is not. A lot of times the other horse wins, so that might be an opportunity here. That's my first horse. In the 8th race, the second half of that late daily double, I like the number 3, Beat That Flu, 5-1 in the morning line, so a little meat on the bones there. This one, Gary Siaka. This horse got off a little step slow last time, but was running very well in this stretch under Eric Cancel. I think it's moving also in the right direction. So Cancel has been absolutely hot this winter. You know his riding styles. It reminds me of kind of like it's kind of like a clone of Joel Rosario in a different level. He loves to take horses back and really finish with them. I'm very impressed by Eric Cancel as a jockey. But we'll go with the 3 horse. Beat That Flu is my second choice in that race 8.
There you go. So 8 and 3 in the double. And, of course, Gary, my man. And I appreciate it. Rich, this was fun. And big weekend ahead. We'll be ahead of Santa Anita Derby Day and Wood Memorial Day and Bluegrass Day when we talk next Thursday.
Yeah, and if Gretzky the Great wins the Jeff Ruby Stakes, we'll have a starting point for our next conversation.
Absolutely. Go get it. Rich Eng, and good luck to Houston as well, and your action toward the Final Four. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick, and Rich's Southern California analysis at racedaylasvegas.com. We'll stay here. We got 20 minutes to close out the morning, and perfect time to tie in and talk to Ed DeRosa. And we're going to get Turfway out of the way so that the gigantic Gulfstream card tomorrow will be the focus. Ed, good morning. Oh. Ed. Uh-oh. Did we lose that?
Sorry, Steve.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Big cards, north and south. I wish there was a river to connect them because that would make a nice segue. But 75, that goes to Florida, right?
I think it. Yeah, it does. Right? Goes to you can angle your way down.
Well, will it be that then? But yeah, head on a swivel Saturday for sure.
Let's get some Turfway thoughts in. And I went through the field. In fact, Rich Eng actually got us in the mood for this, too, because he headed right to Gretzky the Great. It didn't take him long overnight to play. And I just printed out the morning line. And Gretzky's 5-1. Interesting. Hush of a Storm, who won the Battaglia, 4-1 second choice. Tarantino made the 3-1 favorite. And so Gretzky the Great, the third choice at 5-1.
Interesting race for sure. And it does seem like this year on the prep season, we've kind of had the local prep horses. And, you know, they take on the shippers or the up-and-comers, maiden winners, et cetera. Worked out for Hot Rod Charlie, shipping in to beat the LeCompte and Risen Star horses. We'll see what happens with Greatest Honor in the Florida Derby. And similar setup here with the Battaglia trifecta, at the very least. Back for more here in the Jeff Ruby Stakes. But you have the Rudy Brissett shipper is the favorite. And I do agree with that. I think he is going to take the money. 3-1 would be my floor, but I do think he's faster than these, and the synthetic's a question. I don't think the distance is, but I wouldn't want much less than 3-1, so I am hoping that Gretzky the Great and Hush of a Storm and the runner-up like the King all take their share of money, and we get what the morning line advertises, but I think Tarantino wins this race more than 25% of the time.
Interesting. Interesting. I don't know.
But I would say somewhat, I don't know, ironic's not the right word, but, you know, if there were head-to-head wagering and Hush of a Storm happened to be favorite over either of the horses he beat in the Battaglia, I definitely would wager on either the second or third place finisher to turn the table. So hopefully the bettors gravitate toward the ones, and Hush of a Storm has plenty of them on the scorecard, but he kind of looks like the underlay to me at 4-1 if the other two are higher and Tarantino holds at 3.
I liked Rich's thought about Gretzky the Great just because of talking to Cassie after, not long after this. I mean, by all rights, even though he was the even money favorite, that really was not a terrible way to come back. I mean, he hadn't run since November, and you know, that was respectable. And a mile and a 16th off that kind of a break, why not? And he stayed there. He stayed at Turfway a couple of works since. You got to do some pedigree work on some of these horses that are, you know, are going to show up and are trying the synthetic for the first time. I mean, you got Safi Joseph with that awesome Jerry and Smiley Sabatka. I mean, obviously Dale tries, he's willing to try a lot of things to get horses you know, there, Safi Joseph's other horse, Liam's Map, that Moonlight Strike. There's some pedigree work to be done here, I think.
Well, and to that end, Tarantino does have, the dam has produced route winners on the synthetic. You know, it's two, so it's not a ton, but, you know, with dams, you don't typically get a big sample size anyway. But one of her progeny did win on the poly track at Turfway going long. So, you know, they're always kind of like that little boost, I guess, that they've done it before. And Pioneer of the Nile being an Empire Maker stallion, pretty versatile in general. So not too concerned. And he's already won on turf, and actually has not won on dirt. So this makes sense that they targeted this one. But I would say Gretzky the Great from the Battaglia is the one I most want. Brissonette definitely had that as a blazing pace. And looking at the Brissonette pace ratings, 102, 105, easily the fastest Gretzky the Great has gone in his career, and it was off the bench, and it was, I guess he had been off the turf on the synthetic at Woodbine in his second career start, which he won. But, you know, that's a tough ask in the stakes company, and would expect that he has some right to improve. And 5-1 feels okay, but definitely want to see the board in this one.
How give everybody a feel for, you know, for the track, you know, with the weather changing too, and I haven't even thought about that yet. Looking, in fact, I'm going to pull it up right now. But you know, mile in the eighth. In fact, we'll talk about the Bourbonette and the Kentucky Cup too, Ed. So, you know, in terms of the two turn races, stylistically, what's been playing?
You know, I definitely think from a 30,000 foot view, it's fair, and I actually, you know, kind of purposely didn't talk about potential pace for this race, because I think, you know, whether it's the Tapita and jockeys and horses kind of do different things on there, and then you add in the added distance as well. You know, it's hard for me to say who's going to make the lead, whether that's good or bad. I would say it seems like from playing Turfway nightly, or almost nightly, with the eight race cards, is, you know, day to day, the profile is pretty consistent. So if after the first few races, it looks like they're coming from way off the pace, you know, you can kind of keep that in your mind for the later races as well. If it looks like speed is doing well, I typically kind of ride the wave, and it can be dangerous because you're dealing with, you know, the small sample size of just a few races, but if you're looking for that sort of fine line decision, a reason to maybe toss a chalk or to use a 10 or 15 to one you're on the fence on, and they have that running style you've seen do well already today, that's where I kind of give the bump up. So as always, price needs to play a factor, but I do find that day to day, even though it might vacillate between front runner and off the pace, or the rail's bad or the rail's good, I would say you can trust what you see early.
Well, and it's going to be gorgeous on Saturday. There's rain today and a little more tomorrow, which, you know, typically tightens up that surface. And then it's going to be 72 and gorgeous on Saturday. So
you'll never see a big pile of synthetic surface off to the side look so good in the sunlight.
Let's roll back one from the Jeff Ruby and the Bourbonette Oaks. And when I went through this earlier, you know, it McPeak attacking liberally, and Cassie as well with a pair. Brad Cox shows up with a what looks to be potentially a, you know, a serious maiden winner, a horse that he tried three times to get on the turf, and she finally she ends up breaking her. She got better each time on the turf, on the main track, and then she breaks her maiden, and now he's still going to try her on synthetic. So,
adventure. Can't blame him, given the pedigree, another Pioneer of the Nile making the synthetic debut. I was happy to see she's the morning line favorite, though. I think this is a pretty solid group, and you know, given the likely short price because of the connections, and is actually cutting back. You know, it's still two turns in a mile, but I found it interesting that Brad wanted to debut this one long on the turf, and would have to think, given that pedigree, that they got a lot of options going forward. And, you know, I can't imagine what she'd be worth, the daughter of Questing winning the Oaks. So I appreciate the try, but this seems like an opportunity to maybe look against as the favorite. A lot of races on the dance card, none of them on synthetic, but, you know, Bernardini's is fine. But I thought Olivia the Desert, getting that triple-digit late pace rating last out in the Honeybee, which was somewhat off a layoff, about 2.5 months. But you mentioned McPeak, and this is second off the layoff. And Brian Hernandez gets aboard this one with Perry Utes on the other, and Drayden Van Dyke, both good riders, of course. But I take note of Brian getting on this 8-to-1 shot, and I think Olivia the Desert is shipping up with a purpose, and you know, training at Keeneland, he had a few races to look at, and he chose this one, and we're going to go with in Kenny We Trust at 8-to-1.
Yeah, she's got appeal, no doubt, and I'm doing some texting with Graham Motion, and declaration of war filly on the outside, Candace O, looks like she's, you know, she's just using, what does the Briz say on the buyers? She just keeps getting better every start.
Candace O?
Yeah.
Yeah, she definitely improved last. We actually have her top is the second race of her career with an 83. And then kind of took a step back, but was still faster than her debut in the maiden win, and then a step forward pretty much to where she ran second career out. So I haven't seen the you know, the designer numbers to see how that plots, but certainly on Brisneck is the intrigue of maybe that explosive line where she ran back to her top and has some time and now is ready to move forward again. And Bayerano scored a hat trick on Wednesday, so he certainly knows his way around the oval. And she was my second pick, so definitely feeling Candace O, and probably not looking to single here, admittedly, because I am against the favorite, so I want to give myself some options.
Nice. Let's talk about the other big feature and that comes ahead. And, in fact, these three races are all going to be part of the cross country as well. The Kentucky Cup Classic that has had some different incantations, right? This was, used to run this in the fall, right?
Yeah, ran it in the fall. I believe Silver Charm in a dead heat, one of the more popular running. I forget who the dead heat was with. Shame on me. But yeah, one of the good ones on the schedule. And now it's in the spring, which makes sense. With the September meet now at Churchill Downs, but they got a good group here, Overflow Field. And real quick, want to applaud the racing secretary, mutual manager, et cetera. There is a pick five. They added one, and they, I thought, smartly did not make it the late pick five on the last five races. They went with the all stakes pick five. So kudos to them. That should be a fun bet. It starts in race number 7, all stakes pick 4 in race 8, mandatory payout pick 6 in race 6. So the three races we've talked about, certainly very important. And man, set piece just seems to be a different animal when he gets on the synthetic. And I tried to beat him in both those Turfway starts as the favorite, and he bit me, and I guess I got to try again because he's going to, I just feel like he gets over bet, and he can't keep running this well. Empty Tomb got a 99 Brisnet speed rating for Mike Maker last out in that the allowance optional claimer at Aqueduct. I think the distance is what they want for this horse. Some, you know, might see Spikestown and think otherwise, but I love this pedigree on synthetic, and he's making his all-weather debut. And at 10-to-1, I think that's the right price to bet that Corrales can get a run back to that race we saw at Aqueduct.
Very nice. And I'm just looking the Tomb.
If only Empty Tomb were running a week later.
Oh my God. Jesus. Oh my God.
I couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
That was, and it took me a second to tie Easter into this, and I wasn't even thinking about I'm thinking, what is he talking about? Halloween? Wait, it's not about Halloween. What am I? Well done. Well done. A little resurrection humor. Who doesn't love that? By the way, I never heard from you. I do I have to apologize? Was I being too cheeky with my poll the other day?
Never too cheeky for me, but I'm not sure I know what you mean.
I had that poll where I asked everybody when you're watching the TwinSpires Shedro videos, who do you root for most to get bitten?
Oh, I didn't see it. No, that's you didn't, not cheeky at all. I love stuff like that. I'm disappointed I didn't get to interact with it.
I can't believe it. Well, maybe you have me muted because I tagged you and Brian and Joe because it's just so funny that when you're watching those videos, you're saying to yourself, this horse is going to bite him. The
right.
horse is going to bite him. And so I had to do it. And I will say that many of your colleagues and other members of the Churchill community got a big kick out of it because.
I thought it was very funny.
The reason I'm surprised is because you won in a landslide.
Maybe the algorithm was keeping that fate from me, but now I noticed looking through pictures, you know, being in the shed row and getting an opportunity to see horses, like you get that lean going, like, oh, am I going to get bit if I'm too close? And, you know, you're
exactly.
not perfectly straight when you pose. So that's funny. And I do have to tell you, Hoodat was very accommodating, and I was able to do an Eggs Benedict flight there, and
Ooh.
It was delicious.
Nice. I'm glad you went back. I'm sorry I wasn't there. But, and how was you went to Brightson's, right?
No, my God. Yeah. Neil Pessin and Michael Baychuk have both extolled its virtues for years now, and very fortunate to get to go with a couple of my colleagues, and it was absolutely fabulous.
It's a legendary, legendary joint. I mean, and when you got, you know, when you got Hamish eaters like those two, Pessin and Baychuk, you know, that's strong. And who else? There's a bunch of, I think that's usually a big Amos push. Amos surprised us, with that Finn's recommendation, a couple of weeks ago.
That's a Gary P spot.
Oh, is that right?
To go there next year, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sure you're thrilled you went, and I'm sorry I couldn't be there. But this was good. At least we got the big three races knocked out for Turfway on Saturday. You and James tomorrow, and we'll do Gulfstream together as well. Ed, thanks a lot.
I have a real quick rushaway push.
Go ahead.
And it's not overly creative. He's 7-2 on the line, but I do think Cave Hill's the fastest in the race.
Yeah, that horse with Brendan Walsh, that horse has come up this spring and then winter quite a bit. Nice. All right. So that's in the sixth that starts the pick six. There's also the Latonia in there. I see Evelyn for Maker. I haven't done that race yet, but it's a wonderful card, and we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, tomorrow as well. But Ed, good luck today. Good luck. Putting together the Gulfstream action, and we'll talk tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
Ed DeRosa, everybody. EJ XD2, the most popular candidate in my poll to get bit by a horse on the Shed Row videos. Thanks to Ed and to Rich, Tony Black, of course, as well. And there we go. There's some music. And Kip Elser. Good luck today. There's some nice action. You got that push from Rich for the late double, and we'll be back tomorrow with the weekend preview, and it'll be intense. We got a lot to do tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Lord, there goes a Buick 49.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.